Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Mortal Engines, The Mule, If Beale Street Could Talk, and Mary Queen of Scots. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Roma. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is another award nomination list for you, and the reason I want to point it out is because I'm actually involved in this. I'm a voting member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association, and as such, I get to vote in the annual Critics' Choice Awards. Now, the ceremony for the Critics' Choice Awards is going to be on the CW Network on Sunday, January 13th, from 7 to 10 p.m., but the nominations just came out this week, right on Monday, and, you know, actually, I gotta say, sometimes when it comes to award season and we get these nominations, I feel like my vote didn't count, because I'm like, oh, it's all these movies I don't care about, but the movies I really wanted to win or get nominated didn't. But actually, I feel really good about this list. I feel like at least I'm more in line with some of the other voters. There are some that I don't care about, like Roma, and we'll talk about that movie later. I wasn't a huge fan of Roma. I know it's getting a lot of buzz. It's getting a bunch of nominations, everything from actress to best picture. Now, like, the best picture category has Black Panther, Black Klansman, The Favorite, First Man, which is finally getting some traction. You've also got Green Book, which is keeping its traction. It's actually doing well, despite some backlash against it. There are some people who really adversely don't like Green Book in the awards circuit, but I think they're being oversounded by the people who do. If Beale Street Could Talk, which has its limited run opening this week, and so it's just starting, Mary Poppins Return, Roma, as I talked about, A Star Is Born, and Vice. Not a ton of surprises here. I mean, it is kind of surprising to see First Man on there, because it wasn't on a couple other nominations before, but these seem very normal. But one thing I'm really glad about seeing is Black Klansman, which is one of my favorites of the year, was not forgotten. This is a movie that came out in the summer, and that's actually quite daring. Both Black Klansman and then Black Panther, which came out in February. Black Panther came out almost a year ago, but it's still being remembered for this. I mean, everything else is the last 3 months. All these other movies have come out since October, maybe September. But not a ton of surprises, but this looks like it's turning into what the standard award film elements are going to be. Now, a couple things I do think are great. I think it's great that Melissa McCarthy got some love for Can You Ever Forgive Me, as well as Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me. There's also a nice category, young actor or actress, that we have. We got Elsie Fisher for Eighth Grade, Thomasin McKenzie for Leave No Trace. Those are the ones that I really wanted to point out, because I thought they both had really good performances, and sometimes they get lost when you don't have a young actor category, and it's nice to see that. You also had Crazy Rich Asians pick up some stuff, and that's nice to see these popular movies get in there. Like I said, one of the big winners is Black Panther. It got 12 nominations, all the way from Best Picture down to Production Design and Best Song. Also, The Favorite got 14. I think that's what leads it, is with 14 nominations, a lot of acting and ensemble. First Man got 10. And Mary Poppins Returns got 9. So there are these movies that are still have yet to come out. Roma got 8, and A Star Is Born got 9, Vice got 9. Some of these movies haven't even been out for general public consumption. But that bodes well if you like award films, because you're going to have plenty of choices in the coming weeks. Another little piece of news I want to hit really quickly is I saw that a Plastic Man movie is in the works at DC. And I have to say, I don't even know much about it. I think I just saw the headline for it. And I think that's great. I'd love to see an authentic Plastic Man movie. But here's the thing. For a Plastic Man movie to work, you got to give the good old-fashioned silliness of Plastic Man. Plastic Man has been more cartoon than comic book in a lot of ways. If you go back to the history, to the cartoons, I remember watching the cartoon in the 70s and 80s on Saturday morning television. But even then, Plastic Man was always very tongue-in-cheek. If you want to do a Plastic Man movie right, you gotta do it sort of like a PG-13 version of Deadpool. Now, I know that there's that PG-13 version of Deadpool 2 coming out this week. But Plastic Man has never been as dirty or as crass as Deadpool is, but he's been very comical. He's been a wisecracker. And if you do that, you want to have fun. You do not want to bring in a dark, heavy Zack Snyder-verse version of Plastic Man. You don't want that Josh Trank, Fantastic Four, gritty, unpleasant drama that you had with that flop of a movie. You want a good Plastic Man movie that's fun and silly and goofy and irreverent. And, you know, gosh, get the people who do the Spider-Verse movie. Have them do the Plastic Man movie. I think that would be a good idea. Big suggestion to DC there. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is a big one, quite literally, and that comes out May 31st. It's for next summer, and that is Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Senators, we believe that these titans are just the tip of the iceberg. Which of these titans are here to protect us? And which of these titans are here to threaten us?
They're everywhere.
Battling for dominance, a rival alpha to Godzilla.
You gotta be kidding.
I've never been a huge fan of the Godzilla movies. I mean, there's been like 500 of them, and I've seen quite a few of them. Part of them I've seen a lot on Mystery Science Theater, but I've just happened to seen a bunch of Godzilla movies. I've seen some of the more recent ones. I've seen some of the ones that they've done after the goofy 70s ones, where Toho actually tried to put a realistic, so it just didn't feel like a big guy in a rubber suit that looks silly. So some of the stuff that came out in the late 90s and into the 2000s, there are actually some interesting Godzilla movies there. But that's never been a huge franchise for me. The original's kind of cool, and some of the more recent ones are kind of neat, but it still is the guy in the big rubber monster suit. This one I'm looking forward to get that sort of monster smackdown, and you get to see Rodan and some of these other, Ghidra, who the three-headed monster, you get all these characters from the old kaiju movies in this trailer, and that looks great. I just hope that they step away from the overly dramatic like mess that the Godzilla movie from 2014. That one felt like they were trying to make an art house film and then show Godzilla. But the good thing is if you watch the trailer, there's probably about as much Godzilla in that trailer as there was in that 2014 movie. Because that movie, he never showed Godzilla until the very, very end, and that was just kind of stupid, because that's why people want to see these movies. They want to see a smackdown. And so I'm hoping this will be a smackdown along the lines of Pacific Rim, and not a smack in the face like the 2014 Godzilla. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Playmobil, the movie, opens on August 16th.
We're heading into dangerous territory. In this world, nothing is what it seems.
I need to find my little brother. What is going on in this crazy place? I just need to find some help.
I'll pay a fair wage.
Gold.
That's not good. Lucky for you,
I have contacts everywhere.
Ready to have some fun?
Yeah! This is very obviously an attempt to cash in on the success of the Lego movie. The Lego movie, of course, the little figurines, and they made a little movie about it. Now, Playmobil, less well-known, but I used to have Playmobil toys, and they're little figurines that were very popular in the 70s, and I had a bunch of them as a kid, and they're a great little toy set. They're not as steeped in the pop culture as Lego is. Lego's really got its hands and fingers and tendrils into everything pop culture, and that's a lot of fun. And that makes for a great Lego movie. Playmobil does feel a little bit low rent. It does feel less well animated, and it does feel like it's pushing more towards a direct-to-video type movie than the Lego movies, which really feel like they should have a theatrical release. So we'll see what happens. I'm not quite sold on this one yet, but we'll see in August. That's another thing. It's going to be an August release. Yeah, we'll see. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mortal Engines and the Mule. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. We're going to start things out with the Mortal Engines. 1,000 years after a devastating war, cities ride on wheels across the land, and a young woman tries to topple the head of London, the guy who had killed her mother.
60 minutes is all it took to bring humanity to the very brink of extinction. Mankind mobilized. A new age arose. The age of the great predator cities.
I've been looking for you for a long time. Your mother, she said she had found something dangerous. She was afraid of Valentine, of what he might do.
The man who controls this controls the world.
She said that you could stop him.
This is one of those young adult post-apocalyptic books series that's getting adapted onto the big screen. It's got Peter Jackson behind it with Wingnut Films, and it's being directed by a guy who had worked with Peter Jackson on many of his other films in a production capability, so he's getting his directing efforts. Now, with Peter Jackson behind it, it's giving a big push. It's tying it to The Lord of the Rings in terms of the same production team. And in a way, I think that's significant, because although it has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings, it is absolutely trying to recreate the lightning in the bottle that The Lord of the Rings created. Mortal Engines is trying to start another franchise. We saw this a lot when Harry Potter hit it big, because you had the 1-2 punch of Lord of the Rings and then Harry Potter, and then people are like, let's get some of these book series made into movies. And they tried a whole bunch that probably a lot of people don't recognize over the last 15 years. You had stuff like Aragorn and City of Ember and Inkheart and The Golden Compass. There were a whole bunch of these movies that they tried to make the next big fantasy series, and it just kind of fizzled or flopped. They eventually got Twilight, and then they got The Hunger Games, and then again they started trying to do a whole bunch of more new ones, and they had some ones that started okay, like Divergent or The Maze Runner, but those kind of circled the drain. The Maze Runner finished off this year, and that last movie kind of nobody saw it. Divergent didn't even finish its run, because that thing fell apart. And part of it is I think that Harry Potter and the Hunger Games are more the exception than the rule. You can't just take a young adult series and throw it on the big screen. It may not work. Part of it is, it just seems like a lot of these movies, they have these characters that have, they're connected to this person and overly coincidental to this person, and everybody's got a backstory and everybody's got a history with everybody else that's not shared with the audience, and it's all this the stuff that should have been unraveled and revealed right away that they hide and that they don't talk about. It feels at times that's an angsty type thing. That's a TV thing. And they purposely put up those roadblocks for a story purpose, and it doesn't work in a pragmatic short setting like a movie. It becomes silly at a certain point. I mean, sure, there's some great special effects and there's some neat action scenes. I mean, you got these giant cities rolling across the landscape, chasing each other like Mad Max on steroids, and Mad Max is already on steroids. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it's, again, one of these, sort of this Mary Sue character who I don't really care about, and she's just there for the sake of being there, and there's no real reason why she's special and why she has to be the one to topple this guy. The whole movie itself looks neat, but it's at times also very pretentious. Every character is revealed in the first 2 minutes of the movie, gets a crash zoom and an orchestral sting on the crash zoom. And you think, should I know who this person is? Because the music is telling me I really should. I don't know. And the characters weren't that great, and they do silly things, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense at times. Not that it's hard to follow in terms of keeping it straight. I mean, I knew what was going on. It just seemed unnecessarily convoluted. So while The Mortal Engines, I'm sure it's a popular book, it feels a lot more like something like City of Ember than it does like The Hunger Games. And so I'm going to have to say Mortal Engines kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk quickly about The Mule. And when I say talk quickly, it's going to be an interesting talk, because it's a movie that has an interesting current history. Clint Eastwood directs himself in this drama about an old man who becomes a drug mule.
I didn't deserve forgiveness. This is last one. So help me God, this is the last one. For what it's worth, I'm sorry for everything.
Now, this is based on a true story, and it's apparently Clint Eastwood's final film, at least acting. I don't know. He's done the Cher Farewell Tour a couple times. I remember Trouble with the Curve was supposed to be his last acting gig, and Gran Torino was supposed to be his last acting gig. I think at a certain point, Million Dollar Baby was supposed to be his last acting gig. And true, he's the last couple films he's done, stuff like Sully and 1517 to Paris, that he hasn't acted in. But this one, he's back in front of the camera. You would think that a Clint Eastwood movie coming out in December, just 10 days before Christmas, would get a huge push by the studio. You would think that they'd be screening this movie, they'd be showing it to critics for award consideration. If you go to Warner Brothers for your consideration site, and all you have to do, that's a public site, just go to Warner Brothers FYC, you won't see The Mule anywhere on there. And what that says is that Warner Brothers doesn't think that any critic's going to think it's good enough to give it the best of the year for anything. So it was abandoned as an award film a long time ago. That's sort of a red flag, because it's a Clint Eastwood movie, and usually those get an awards push. I have tons of Clint Eastwood screeners, even crappy movies like The Changeling or Flags of Our Fathers. I've got screeners of that. The other problem is they didn't screen this one very well. I heard that there were some last-minute New York LA screenings. But in flyover country, which is where Clint Eastwood's bread and butter is. I mean, you want to talk about the people that made American Sniper a hit are in flyover country. I live in Columbus, Ohio. They didn't screen it here. Now, like American Sniper, they showed it to us like a month early. They made a point. I got screeners for that, and they did, I know they did public screenings for it. Not The Mule. So I said, well, I'll go see it like on a Thursday night before I talk about it on the radio on a Friday. They didn't even have Thursday night previews. That's a huge red flag. When they don't have Thursday night previews, that means they don't want people to even go pay to see the movie too early. That reeks of them trying to control the narrative. It is rare for a movie to not be shown on a Thursday night. Maybe like if it's a kid's movie, like I remember the Peanuts movie, they didn't show on Thursday night. But they said, hey, it's a kid's movie. Who's going to go out in the middle of a Thursday, just go on the weekends, go on Saturday with your kids. They didn't even put it out there for preview showings. I couldn't see it before this show if I wanted to. And that's not a good sign. Again, like I said, that's them trying to control the narrative, and that's trying to get them to control the narrative just from word of mouth. When they're trying to control word of mouth, that's really bad. So the movie looks like it might be interesting, but it also could be really long and dull and boring. Considering the fact that you have all these indicators that they don't want critics or people, just average Americans, to see it earlier, you can do the math yourself. Tread cautiously on this one, because I'm going to have to say it preemptively sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and If Beale Street Could Talk.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And yes, it's another superhero movie. I know what everyone's thinking. Why are there so many superhero movies? I hate superhero movies. They're just garbage. And then, well, you know what? People go see these movies. Two of the biggest movies of the year, Black Panther and Avengers Infinity War, were superhero movies. You know what was another huge hit? One of the top grossing movies of the year? The Incredibles 2, another superhero movie. Look, you know what? If you don't like superhero movies, don't go see them. You don't have to get mad at all the superhero movies. People like them. People like movies about heroes. People like movies about the little guy trying to beat the big guy and winning. They like movies about people doing the right thing for the right reasons. And they like movies about heroes. There's a reason why superhero movies connect with people. There's a reason why superheroes as a whole have been in our pop culture for modern superhero movies for 100 years. I mean, going all the way back to, you know, the Flash Gordon stories. He was essentially a superhero. Comic books have been around since the 20s. It's been 90 years since these comic book superheroes have been around. Last year, we celebrated the 80th birthday of Batman. Next year, we're celebrating the 80th birthday of Superman. They're the modern myth tale. I mean, superhero stories go all the way back to the Greek myths with Hercules and Achilles. Look, people out there who just bemoan superhero movies, just deal with it, because you're going to get more of them until they just stop making money. And you know what? I mean, this is a phenomenon that's been going on decades. I mean, superhero movies have been around forever, really. Ever since they made movies. You had the Superman movie in 1978. That was sort of like the first modern one. And then in 1989, you had the Batman movie. But, you know, the Incredible Hulk in the 70s. You had, you know, Superman TV show in the 50s. You had the Superman serial in the 40s. I mean, these are big deals. And they're always going to be around. And here's the new one. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. In this animated comic book movie, Miles Morales becomes a new Spider-Man, only to discover that a portal has opened under New York, bringing multiple versions of the web-slinger into his universe.
My name is Miles Morales. Brooklyn! I'm the one and only Spider-Man. At least that's what I thought.
You ever hear of the Super Collider?
You're gonna love this.
Dimension opening now.
You're like me.
That's impossible.
We need to get back to our universes soon.
Brooklyn is going to collapse. My family lives in Brooklyn.
This was never your city. It's mine.
If I don't destroy the collider, none of us will have a home to go home to.
Superhero movies have become so big and so well known that people have become acclimated to the more bizarre things that go on in the comics. The idea of multiple universes, I know that breaks people's brains, some of them. I mean, if you're one of those people who thought Inception was too hard to follow, you're going to have problems with this movie because it deals with the alternate universes. And if you can't understand a dream within a dream within a dream, you're not going to be able to understand multiple universes. But this is a theory that's been around for decades. It's been played around with in science fiction for 50 years. I mean, since Star Trek was doing stuff. And, you know, and then of course, comic books had this multiple universes and different versions of Superman, different versions of Batman, different versions of Spider-Man. They've been doing that for a long time. And even now with Avengers, you've got a lot of stuff being teased for more Avengers stuff. They're going to start expanding into alternate universes as well. And I welcome it. Watch a couple Star Trek episodes. You can understand what a multiple universes is. There's multiple versions of our universe. Boom. Portal. Opens it up, and it comes across. Now, this is an animated movie. I don't want to call it a cartoon, because I think a cartoon diminishes it. It's an animated movie, and it is as bona fide of an adventure action serious film as The Incredibles 2 was. That's an animated movie, CGI. This one draws directly from the comic book, so you don't have the traditional Peter Parker origin story. In this one, you've got Miles Morales, who's another Spider-Man from the comics, little black kid from Brooklyn. And he finds this portal that the Kingpin, who's a villain in the Marvel Universe, opens. And of course, we get all these different Spider versions around. Everything from like an older Peter Parker to Spider Dark, who's voiced by Nicolas Cage as a sort of a film noir version of Spider-Man, all the way to Gwen Stacy as Spider-Gwen and Peter Parker as the Amazing Spider-Ham, who's this little cartoon pig who walks around in a Spider-Man outfit, which I think is, oh, it's so out of the box and it's so bizarre when it finally shows up. But boy, is it fun. It is out there. It's done by the same people who do the Lego movie. So you get the irreverence and you get the pop culture references and you get the tongue-in-cheek version of the film. It's got innovative animation. The animation is actually stunning. You can sit there and know nothing about animation and just watch it and be like, wow, this is impressive. But even if you know something a little bit about animation and a little bit about CGI, they do some neat stuff with this. And they have a style that's unique. You've never seen something quite like this. It doesn't look cheap like a thing from a television series. This is intricate and well done and artistic. And it's just a fun movie. honestly, you know, sometimes I don't get as much sleep as I want. And it's not uncommon for me as I'm watching a movie to start to doze off. I don't get my nap is basically what it is. I'm in my 40s. I need my nap now. I don't always get my nap. This is the first movie where I was glued to it and didn't even feel like falling asleep in months. And that says a lot. This is a fun movie. Kids can enjoy it. Adults can enjoy it. If you've read comic books, you're going to love it. If you've never read Spider-Man, you can still figure it out. This is easily the best Spider-Man movie I've seen in a decade. And it's just a fantastic film, and I think everybody can enjoy it. So I'm going to say Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about If Beale Street Could Talk. Based on the James Baldwin novel, this story follows a young black couple who get pregnant only to have the man wrongfully imprisoned.
We are drinking to new life. Tish gonna have Fonny's baby.
I hope it's a boy. Come on over here, daughter.
You're a good girl, and I'm proud of you. Don't you ever forget it.
And who's gonna be responsible for this baby?
The father and the mother.
I'm gonna hold you in my arms. I gotta hold our baby in my arms.
We'll find a way.
That child was born of sin.
I've not read this. I've not read any James Baldwin. I'll admit that right away. I actually have the book. The studio sent it to me, and I'm like, I can't read. Why? I have a movie. I could watch the movie in 2 hours. It's going to take me longer than that to read the book. Just kidding. But this is a classic piece of James Baldwin's literature. It takes place in the 70s. And at its heart, it's a love story. It's the story of these two young people who are trying to stay in love and trying to stay true to themselves in some pretty awful circumstances. He's been wrongfully convicted and imprisoned for rape because of a dirty cop. The real problem I have with the story is it is so contrived. Maybe it wasn't as contrived in the 70s when it came out, but it does kind of, it's got that white racist cop with the grit ball mustache who, of course, frames him. I mean, it's relevant because, of course, you still got, you know, race relations and police issues. That still bubbles up to the surface and into the zeitgeist and into the national conversation. So I think it's at the very least, it's an interesting perspective. Go in with an open mind and see how this works. And at the very least, you're going to see how, you know, some people can perceive what's happening to everybody in its entirety. I think it does paint with a broad brush at times, but that's James Baldwin. That's the purpose of this movie. Now, it's directed by Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight, which was a great movie, won an Oscar for it, or rather, the movie won the Oscar. He didn't win for Best Director because the Academy's not ready for that yet. And so it's well done. It's not my cup of tea, though. And it's not about Beale Street. For those who want to know, it's not about Beale Street. Beale Street is a metaphor. But it's an interesting movie to see as it not doing everything that you would expect a movie like this would do. And having grounded characters. And they have good acting in it. And like I said, it's just not my, it's a kitchen sink drama at its heart. But it is worth checking out. It's in limited release right now, expanding over the next couple weeks. So I'm going to have to say, If Beale Street Could Talk, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mary, Queen of Scots, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Roma. To Fat Guys at the Movies. We are finishing things up, and we're going to finish up with Mary, Queen of Scots. This historical drama tells the story of Mary Stuart, who returns to Scotland with a claim to the British throne and how Queen Elizabeth I works politics to keep her reign safe.
Mary is our foe. We must never bow to her as we bow before you.
You have the boldness to doubt my judgment.
She is only your queen if I should not produce an heir.
What is it like to have a man?
With heaven's blessing, we bring an heir to Scotland and to England.
It is a clear provocation.
We must make war in Scotland.
So put your skills to use.
I mentioned this when I played the trailer for this a couple months ago. My father is a huge fan of European history. And as a kid, he'd always talk about, you know, Plantagenet kings of England, and I knew who Henry V was, and I knew who Richard III was, and I knew he was the final Plantagenet, and I knew who Henry Tudor was, and that's just stuff that you absorb when you've got a parent who's really into something. Now, he's been talking for months about, when's Mary Queen of Scots coming out? When's that going to... He's interested in it. And I showed him the trailer, and he looked really interested in it. And this movie, he is going to love. He is going to think it's the greatest movie of the year, because that's what this movie's about. It's about these two powerful women who had claim to the throne and how they're using the politics of the day and the maneuvering and meddling back and forth with each other. And sometimes it getting violent and sometimes it getting pretty nasty. There's all these different hands, you know, moving things around and stirring the pot. And he loves that kind of stuff. And he is going to go bonkers over this movie. It's going to be his favorite movie of the year. I guarantee it. If that's the way you are, if you love the British crown and the history behind the British crown and how royalty is succeeded and what happens when somebody doesn't have an heir and why that's so important and how they manage to pick a new one, that's who this movie is for. Now, I can't speak for historical accuracy. I'm not a big history buff. So, I mean, I'm aware of Mary Queen of Scots. I mean, I know the general idea, but the intricacy and who did this and when they did that and who they're married to and how this bloodline works with that bloodline. And I can understand the whole Catholic versus Protestant, because Mary Stuart was Catholic. And of course, England at the time was Protestant. And that was a huge deal. I mean, for some people, it's a huge deal. I mean, Ireland still's dealing with that sort of thing. But back then, I mean, there were entire wars fought over this kind of thing. I mean, that's what the Crusades were about. Well, it wasn't about Protestant versus Catholic, but it was about religion. So all that's important, but as I watch the movie, I'm like, it's a history movie. Now, there's some great performances. Saoirse Ronan is fantastic as Mary Queen of Scots. She even looks like Mary Queen of Scots. If you go back and you look up some portraits of her, she looks quite close to how Mary Stuart was. Margot Robbie plays Elizabeth I, and she's okay. I mean, I think she does fine with what she's given. But part of it is this movie, it equivocates. It does. It, on one hand, Queen Elizabeth I is seen as kind of the ultimate British monarch. She's seen as a hero. They even did those Elizabeth movies with Cate Blanchett with her. She's seen as one of the major good guys in British history. Well, in this one, she's kind of the bad guy, because she is trying to block Mary's claim to the throne. They at times try and make her the villains, but then there are times they kind of soften her up because they want history to look at her right. And the woman who does this is she's a Brit, and I think she kind of has a fondness for Queen Elizabeth. But you know, the performances are good, the costumes are good. They have some interesting things going on here. The problem is, for me, I don't care about the history. I mean, I can understand the gross history. The Mary Queen of Scots wanted a throne, and she wanted to be the next in line to be the Queen of England, but Elizabeth wanted to stop that because she wanted control. And I get that. But all the other nuances and stuff with this person and that person, and you got Doctor Who playing John Locke, and all this kind of thing swirling in the background, it just turns into a bunch of people in castles trying to figure out who's going to marry whom. And I'm not into that. So it does get a little bit dull for me. It reminds me of the movies that my dad would watch on PBS when I was a kid that were about kings and queens of England that I was just kind of bored with. Give me a sword fight or something. And they have some battle sequences that are cool, but those are few and far between. Most of this is about political maneuvering, which is interesting, but I am so unaware of all the nuance of it that it just becomes a lot of noise. But like I said, if you're a big fan, you're going to love it. So I'm going to say that Mary Queen of Scots, I'm going to be nice and say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Ralph Breaks the Internet had three-peated last week, and part of the reason it three-peated, it only had like 16 million, but that's because there was nothing new that opened that last week. I mean, even Schindler's List, the 2018 re-release for the 25th anniversary, that came in 14th. That made $500,000. That barely even rolled into the theaters. Everything else was small, and I mean, like, Mary Queen of Scots was in 4 theaters, and Vox Lux was in 6 theaters. They both expand this week. So, I mean, it was a breakdown of what you see in the top 10 from the week before. The Grinch, and Creed 2, and Fantastic Beasts, and Bohemian Rhapsody. This week's going to be totally different, because we actually have movies out there in the theater. I think the big one to watch this week is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This, it's not going to be the $300 million plus Spider-Man live action movies that we've seen, but it's going to do really well, especially for what would have been a direct-to-video animated film 5-6 years ago. This is going to be a surprise hit. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Spotlight this week is on Roma, which is a Netflix movie. It's actually been out in limited release. They've been putting it in the theaters. And the reason they did that, they did the same thing with Buster Scruggs several weeks ago, because they are putting this up for award consideration. And in order to be considered for the Oscar, in particular the Oscar, you have to have a theatrical run and before it goes on to streaming or home video. So they couldn't stream it on Netflix because it streams on Netflix this weekend. It released on Netflix, but it had theatrical releases. And, you know, if you had the right theater and you knew your art house, you could get there. But it's now available for anybody who's got Netflix. And that is, now I don't have a trailer for it. I apologize. And the reason I don't have a trailer is because it's in Spanish and you wouldn't understand it unless you speak Spanish. And generally, you know, radio stations frown on me just throwing foreign language on the air without telling them what it is. So Alfonso Cuarón directs this personal story about a woman living in Mexico City in the 1970s as she faces struggles with her job, her love life, and the politics of the city. Alfonso Cuarón is best known for doing movies like Gravity. He won an Academy Award for that. He also did movies like Children of Men. He did Harry Potter and The Prisoner of Azkaban. So he's worked with big movies, action movies, and films that have massive effects budget. I mean, like Gravity was all effects. I don't think there's a shot in that movie that doesn't have some sort of visual effect element to it. This is not an effects movie. This is very different than what Cuarón has done, and it's a very personal story because he grew up in Mexico City in the 70s, and he wasn't. This is about a woman who works as basically a maid or servant for this somewhat wealthy family of Europeans who live in Mexico City. He's like a professor, and she works in the household, so she takes care of the kids, and she sees it sort of that from that nanny perspective. And we've seen that in other movies. I even remember The Help, Viola Davis as the maid. Well, had a better connection with the kids than the parents did. And they kind of show that here and her connection with those kids as being surrogate kids for her. I don't know how this all fits into Cuarón's personal experiences, but he makes it very real. He also shoots it in a very unique way. It's shot with very few. It's not shot with coverage. In movies, you generally have, you know, master shot and then you have coverage, like you have close-ups and two shots and multiple camera angles. A lot of it is shot almost like a postcard. Just the camera is there and it takes everything in. Now they have cuts and they sometimes do close-ups or what would be close-ups, but it's still a very removed. It looks like it's assembly of postcards. It's in black and white, so it's an innovative look. It's a beautifully shot movie, and it's almost like you're a fly on the wall watching this stuff happen. I do not know, again, like I mentioned with Mary Queen of Scots, I don't know my history and politics enough to really know the nuance of Mexican politics in the 1970s, but it certainly shows where it was volatile and how you could get mixed up in it. And it shows the various levels of society and the various levels of wealth. And it does break down in an extremely removed sense the strata and that sort of thing. So there's a lot in the movie. There's a lot in the movie as depth. But it's going to be a tough sell for some people because it's in Spanish and it's also in a native dialect from Mexican native dialect. Some of it's in English, but not very much. And it's like 2.5 hours long. So know that going in. It's getting a lot of buzz and it's going to be nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars, not just Best Foreign Language Film. So you're going to hear a lot about this and this is going to have traction. So if you want to keep up on that sort of thing, you're going to want to check it out. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also out this week, we have The Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington, Peppermint with Jennifer Garner. I mean, nothing says Christmas like revenge vigilante movies. You've got Smallfoot, Lizzie, about Lizzie Borden, Colette, and Unbroken Path to Redemption. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be finishing off the pre-Christmas movies that include Aquaman, Mary Poppins Returns, and Bumblebee. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.